vice versa, as is to wait for Russia's nuclear strikes. Russia Today explains about the same story. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said on Friday, 7th of October, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's remark about a preemptive strike on Russia confirms the threats coming from Kiev and the necessity of the special military operation. Sergei Lavrov said via video link at a session of the United Party's Commission within the framework of the International Interparty Forum of Environmental Policy and Sustainable Growth. Lavrov said, recently, Volodymyr Zelensky urged his Western overlords to deliver a preemptive nuclear strike on Russia. By doing so, this person essentially showed the entire world more evidence of the threats emanating from Kiev and why the special military operation was launched to neutralize it. Sergei Lavrov laughed off the maneuvers by Zelensky's various aides who sought to downplay the Ukrainian president's remarks. The Russian foreign minister emphasized, we all remember how back in January he was talking about Ukraine's aspiration to obtain nuclear weapons. It turns out this idea is thoroughly stuck in his head. He stressed, when we are talking about environmental safety, we cannot ignore those discussions that recently have been persistently escalating about the topic of the possible use of nuclear weapons. Especially concerning this, we cannot turn a blind eye to the reckless actions of the Kiev regime, which are aimed at creating risks of using various kinds of weapons of mass destruction. The Russian foreign minister Lavrov reiterated that the special military operation uncovered very alarming facts, including the presence of illegitimate military biological programs at laboratories established by the Pentagon in Ukraine, which involved experiments on developed forbidden chemical substances. Sergei Lavrov added, certainly the very dangerous incessant strikes on the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant continue. The TASS news agency has more about the same story, but from a different angle. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told reporters on Tuesday, 4th of October, that the vast majority of countries in the world understand that Moscow is right in the situation around Ukraine. Sergei Lavrov said, I assure you the vast majority of countries understand that we are right perfectly, but, well, objectively speaking, not all of them have the courage and strength to speak frankly about it. Still, an overwhelming majority of countries refuse to support the steps that the West is taking in the economic sphere and the overall sanctions pressure on Russia. According to the Russian foreign minister, the West, immersed in an anti-Russian frenzy, feels a lack of strong arguments in support of its position and seeks to intimidate all other countries, first and foremost, the developing countries of Asia, Africa, and Latin America, using threats and blackmail to make them take a position condemning Russia. Sergei Lavrov noted that it was further proof of the collective West's weak position. The Russian foreign minister said, if you believe that you're right, you should explain what you think about certain international developments and let other people decide for themselves, like adults, whose arguments are more convincing in this case, whether it's Russia and the residents of Donbass and Ukraine who are unwilling to remain under the rule of a neo-Nazi regime, or it's the collective West who has proclaimed Ukraine a beacon of democracy and pledged to fight until the last Ukrainian in order to weaken Russia as much as possible or maybe even divide it. Sergei Lavrov added, Ukrainian officials are no longer hiding their neo-Nazi identity, he said. Ukrainian officials are unabashedly displaying their new Nazi character openly calling for slaughtering of Russians worldwide.
Economic divide.
The Ukraine conflict is over 9 months old, yet the U.S. is leading Europe down the warpath with Russia. And for as much as the European economies continue to suffer, one country is benefiting from the crisis. That country, the U.S. Is it knowingly pushing Europe down this path to make out on things like energy sales? Hi, I'm Kaveh Tahlai. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in today's programs, Europe's economy is taking a beating. UK's new tax plan slammed. Germany's double-digit inflation is beating also down the economies, including the EU inflation standing at 10%. That is not good news for Europe as a whole. Then, taking a look at the Nord Stream sabotage, the gas pipeline was damaged. A Polish politician thanked the U.S. Russia blames the U.S. in turn, though not directly. Who would benefit from this? Many say the U.S. would, because the U.S. President Joe Biden did say that prior to the Ukraine conflict. Then, focus is on U.S. dubious plans, dragging the war for its own benefit. Is it guilty of that? Tax incentives for EU companies to relocate to the U.S. is one reason. As a result, Europe's deindustrialization is taking place.
As the war drags on in East Europe, the European Union is beginning to emerge as the biggest economic loser of the war. The bloc was already battered by 2 years of economic recession, which was triggered by the COVID-19 crisis. But the Union is now having to cope with surging energy prices amid a standoff with Russia.
When it comes to online posts on this topic, there were many because it covers a vast array of topics, from the European economies and the countries in the 27-member bloc to Russia, to the Ukraine conflict, and, of course, the role that the U.S. plays in all of this. Our first post is about Germany. Germany will fall far from its throne in the Eurozone economy and will not be able to return as current energy-triggered industrial shutdowns add to the hollowing out that was already underway as big manufacturers redeployed, now hastened by need to decouple with China. Next is also about Germany. I think many Germans don't realize how the energy crisis directly threatens Germany's future as a prosperous country. Germany has a huge bureaucracy and social welfare apparatus and provides comparatively generous subsidies for the arts. Next up, when push comes to shove over Taiwan, the U.S. will not hesitate to ruin the economies of Japan and South Korea in order to do damage to China, just as it is now sacrificing the EU's economy to strangulate Russia. Then the Germans shall not loathe themselves anymore as the USA and London destroyed a vital pipeline for Europe. It is time for Germans to rediscover their Prussian spirits that made them the envy of Europe. Next up, Denmark and Sweden. They are saying that the Nord Stream pipelines were damaged by a blast that was equal to hundreds of pounds of explosives. The Euros are playing a fun game where they have to investigate who did this while knowing that it was likely the U.S., but they aren't allowed to say that. And more on the blast on the Nord Stream. Nord Stream blast equal to several hundred kilos of TNT. Reports have indicated that the four leaks affecting the Nord Stream gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea were caused by underwater explosions corresponding to hundreds of kilograms of explosive, based on a Danish-Swedish report. It said the magnitude of the explosion was measured at 2.3 and 2.1 on the Richter scale, respectively, probably corresponding to an explosive load of several hundred kilos. This is what the two countries said in a joint report to the U.N. Security Council. Of course, what good does that do? The U.N. convenes, but yet nothing is done about it, really. At this point, no follow-through investigations are still somewhat at a standstill at this point. Our guest joining us for the first segment of the Q&A, first we have Vladimir Goldstein joins us. Vladimir Goldstein is the professor of Slavic studies who joins us from Providence, Rhode Island. Vladimir Goldstein, welcome. Taking a look at these pipeline explosions that have happened, all eyes are on the U.S. for an explanation because the U.S. president had said prior to the Ukraine conflict that it would do that. Is the U.S. guilty of it?
The question is about pipeline and who benefits from that and who's done that. We really see that country, the only country which will benefit from that outside, of course, Ukraine, which has very myopic short-term interest, is the United States. They have been very much interested in splitting and driving a wedge between Russia and Europe, and a pipeline and, you know, gas, cheap gas, is one of the very, you know, means of connecting this to this, you know, these two parts of economic equation. So United States is very much interested in separating them, and they've been interested in that for a long time. If you watch the news, they've been against this any kind of pipeline. You know, Russia tries to do a pipeline through the south. No, Russia tries to do the pipeline all around Ukraine. No. Why? Because Ukraine is the only place which United States fully control, and they can stop the pipeline from working through Ukraine if they want to. So that was their interest, to stop the pipeline going. And finally, they used this opportunity of the war to put an end to that. They were threatening, they were pushing the Germany, they were trying to stop it by peaceful means. It didn't work out. Now they did it through military means, whether it's the United States itself or through some proxies, like maybe they hired Poles or Ukrainians, we don't know. But that's the only country which is interested in that, and the only country with means. So they have means, they have opportunity, because Russia didn't have opportunity to do these things in Baltics. Baltics are very much controlled by all NATO equipment, by all things. So Russians didn't, even if they wanted to, there is no reason for them to want it after they invested billions of dollars in that. But, you know, Russians just couldn't do that. United States had motive, had opportunity, and had very much interest in it. So no doubt about that, they benefit from it.
All right, let me introduce our next guest for this program. Mousami Makhboul joins us, founder of the Rumi Center for Global Peace, which runs advocacy projects for peace and sustainability. Great cause. He has been associated with the World Bank, the UNDP, the UNAOC, and also for UNICEF, mostly working and advocating for Rohingya refugees. Mousami Makhboul, welcome to Economic Divide. We're advocating for Rohingya refugees, obviously, is a great cause. But taking a look at the Ukraine conflict and a process that's happening in Europe called deindustrialization, how do you assess that? I mean, what are we looking at? Is that actually what is going on when it comes to Europe, in particular relocating to the U.S. in terms of its factories?
Well, it has been recently confirmed by World Trade Organization, World Bank, as well as by World Economic Forum, and leading 22 world economists around the world, you know, have confirmed that there will be massive recession coming in 2023. The Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines have been hit, and the destruction is real, and the repairs would take more than 8 to 10 months. This would be one of the most concerning issue as of now. And, you know, importing energies from U.S., which what actually the U.S. wants, you know, they want, you know, the entire Europe not to be dependent on Russia, but to have an alternative importing country as United States. So this would be, again, a very, very tough challenge for not only Germany, but other parts of Europe as well.
The Info News section is upon us, and we're going to start out with what's become now a common topic when we have had our episodes aired before. And this particular one is about what's ahead when it comes to the EU and the winter. Now, the Energy Commissioner is warning of a difficult winter amid the energy crisis there. The EU is saying this winter is going to be very hard, but the next one will even be worse in terms of what is going to happen. And the EU itself is admitting to that. So it's kind of preparing the population to be prepared for what's upcoming this winter and maybe even the next. On to our next piece of news. This piece of news is really important in so many ways. Geopolitics of the world may have gotten a shock in terms of how there has been a resistance against the West, and in particular the U.S., which leads NATO. And basically this is about the new Russian territories, where it happened through a referendum. These Ukrainian territories joined Russia. It was considered a major win for Putin. Western leaders reacting. The U.S. will help Ukraine regain control, but we haven't seen that happen as of yet. There has been one particular region within these territories that Ukraine has taken control. But the reason for this to be part of the InfoNews section is to highlight how Russia is standing against the Western aggression. And, of course, that itself has economic repercussions. Next up, a topic, again, that we've covered, but it's really important, is concerning the economy of the UK and what Liz Truss, the new prime minister, has done. She's been slammed for the new tax cut scheme that she has introduced. One of the side effects, the rich are going to benefit over the poor. And that's not good for the UK as a whole or any other country. She is focusing on what is known as trickle-down economics, but many analysts and economists alike have said that's not going to work. Since we've talked about the UK economy, next up we're going to take a look at the U.S. economy for our InfoNews section, in which it shrank from the months of April through till June. Now, does that mean that the U.S. is in a recession? Well, if you have two consecutive quarters, by definition, that should constitute a recession. Yet the U.S. is not admitting to that, and it's not reflected that way in the news. Those were the topics for our InfoNews section.
You're listening to Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
This is the InfoNews section of the program. We're going to try to see how the U.S. benefits from the Ukraine conflict. Well, first up, Europe's economy was battered not only before COVID, but then after the pandemic for two straight years. So it took a beating then. Now it is suffering from an energy crunch. After all, Russia provided Europe with almost 40% of its gas needs. Gone are the days when Europe could buy cheap Russian gas, which has vanished from European markets. Now, given that, that spells bad news for many European factories, where lack of natural gas is hindering industrial operations. So that's a big factor there. So bad is the situation with the factories across the 27-member bloc that many are forced to shut down. Well, in essence, since there is a European-wide energy crisis, many are looking to not only quit the continent, but to shift the production elsewhere. Did you ask where they are relocating to? That country is the U.S. Does that surprise you? Yes, such is the case. The U.S. is emerging as a destination for European companies looking to get out of the crisis-ridden European Union. That's right. Well, don't take our word for it. Our source was the Wall Street Journal, which said amid Europe's energy crisis, manufacturers are actually shifting to the U.S.
A big winner is emerging from Europe's energy crisis, and it's the U.S. economy. As the Ukraine war drives up European energy costs, a number of European manufacturers are being lured to the relative stability of the United States.
Now, here's a question for you. Do you think it's a coincidence that the U.S., for example, recently passed what's called the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act? One of the goals of this act was meant to lure European companies into the U.S. Is it beginning to sink in now? And that is what has happened. The European branch of the steel company ArcelorMittal car maker Volkswagen. You have the Pandor Danish jeweler. Just three of those have relocated to the U.S. as a jewelry company. And chemical maker OCI. Again, just a few of the factories that have relocated to the U.S. Meanwhile, what has been Europe's solution? It has reacted by setting aside 500 billion euros. That's right, 500 billion euros to cushion the energy crisis. But is that enough? And more importantly, will it work? Well, let's get an analysis into all of these points if we possibly can. Let me reintroduce our guest who's rejoining us for this. Vladimir Goldstein, professor of Slovak studies from Providence, Rhode Island, joins us. Vladimir, welcome back. Some of the accusations are flying around about the U.S. to actually deliberately be dragging this war out because it has many advantages for the U.S. Do you think that there are economic advantages for the U.S. behind dragging this war out, vis-a-vis, for example, European companies relocating to the U.S.?
This war with Ukraine seems to be a godsend for United States of America. That is, they're accomplishing a number of goals. On the surface of it, it looks like they want to weaken Russia. But this is just on the surface of it. What this explosions in pipeline disclosed to the rest of the world to see is that there's also an economic warfare, and its target is not Russia, because we see that Russians are doing relatively well. They have a lot of resources. They have relatively under-industrialized base. So they have where to go and what to do. But Europe, without Russian gas, is getting weaker and weaker. So not only the United States are now stronger versus Europe as a competitor, but they also can benefit from European know-how. They can lure Western European companies. They can redirect, take the talents. And let's not forget it. One reason the United States is one of the top countries, if not the top country, is because they always had a chance to attract talents and know-how and energy, and now it's another opportunity. They would get people from all over Europe, from businesses, well-prepared businesses, so it's in their benefit, and they don't have much to lose, as opposed to Europeans who sort of will have very bad inflation. United States actually benefit from that, and they're not losing manpower, resources, and so on. So I think the situation is pretty good as far as the United States is concerned. And so there is no reason to suspect that the United States will sit down and negotiate or force Ukrainians to negotiate.
Okay, let's see what our other guest thinks. Mouzami Makhboul, who's the founder of the Rumi Center for Global Peace. Mouzami Makhboul, welcome back. Do you agree with what our guest there said about the U.S.?
Well, United States has always, and their partner in crime, Israel, has always been involved in starting a war, funding a war, then earning from war and earning from any conflict, across the world. I could go on, I could discuss my research papers, my thesis, on how U.S. has always been directly or indirectly involved in the United States. Not only inflation has occurred in the entire United States, but then we have also seen the conflict in between, the escalation in between Ukraine and Russia going on. So they are not only benefiting from the war, but they are also trying to, isolate the entire Russia, because that's what United States is seeing them as their biggest enemy. They want to isolate war by getting many big companies out from Europe and to relocate them to United States so that they can have a new alternative. They can have the new alternative in U.S. And on the other hand, U.S. also wants that entire Europe should import energies, energy, natural resources, natural energy, from United States to the European countries, so that, they should not only isolate the Russia, but there should be a very strong and firm alternative to Russia's energy, which the Russia via Gazprom has been supplying for many, many years now. I think this would not, be a successful This is a sort of, you know, dream of U.S. getting many companies out of European nations, you know, to get them relocated in U.S. I think this would not be successful for a very, very long run. You know, people, companies, heads of those companies would realize, and they have realized that, you know, stabilization is a very important part, and staying in Europe would be better, especially if given a chance for peace and stopping the Russia and Ukraine war as early as possible.
Amid the ongoing crisis, many European companies are beginning to relocate to the United States. The U.S. was already suffering from high inflation and an energy crunch.
But when we had the runaway inflation in the 70s, Chairman Volcker was very aggressive in raising interest rates to combat it. And it took a while, and it took a very high level of interest rates to do so. And I think that's what has the equity market a little nervous now, is because if Chairman Powell takes the same playbook and gets overly aggressive on rates, we may see the same result that we had from the 70s, which is a deep recession that goes on for a while, and the phrase stagflation that came from it.
Relocation of European manufacturers to the U.S. will give it a big advantage by boosting investment and creating jobs. It will also strengthen the country's industrial economy.
When it comes to Europe's economic situation, to say it's not doing well is an understatement. Europe could be on the brink of another financial crisis. The developments in Europe is indicative of that. Take France. A nationwide strike demanding higher pay disrupted the energy sector as nuclear power industry workers joined the walkout. Strikes also hit Total Energy's refineries in many days. Then comes the UK. The UK Prime Minister, Liz Truss, has not been in office for more than a month, yet she has sent the UK economy in a tailspin. First, her announcement of a new tax plan was blasted to benefit the rich more than the poor. Even the IMF weighed in and slammed Liz Truss's tax cuts and urged Britain to reevaluate its spending plan. Next, Germany. What can be said about Germany, the European powerhouse, or should we say the former European powerhouse? First, it was reported that the 2023 inflation would hit 8.8% as the economy continued to shrink. That was then revised to accelerate to 10% in September. And inflation will keep rising next year while the economy is set to go into a recession. The German economy minister, Habeck, painted an even gloomier picture, saying that the current energy crisis threatens to grow into a social and economic crisis. The European Union and Europe are as a whole suffering from massive negative economic indicators like inflation and high energy costs. In terms of inflation, consumer price index in the Eurozone rose a record 10% in September from a year earlier, up from an annual 9.1% in August. That does it for this edition of the program.
A quick question. What stage is the Ukraine conflict at? Well, the U.S. has said that it will not stop until Russia is weakened. Now, that sounds like the conflict is actually going to go on for quite some time. That also leaves the U.S. plenty of time for European companies and factories to relocate, and then for the U.S. to execute its aggression against China, even more so. But what the U.S. and its European partners may have underestimated is the power of the people rising up against the European governments for their anti-Russia policies. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. It was great having you with us. From Mikhail Tarvay and the entire team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Unity from the viewpoint of the Noble Quran. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are in the Unity Week. The Unity Week is the period between the 12th and 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal. It was Imam Khomeini's initiative to call this period as the Unity Week to help bring the hearts of Muslims together, as Sunni Muslims believe that the 12th of this month is the birthday of the Prophet of Islam, while Shia Muslims maintain that it falls on the 17th of the month. No doubt, unity is the only way to empower the Islamic world against the incessant assaults and conspiracies of enemies. In view of this, most of Muslim scholars have understood that besides the practice of the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt, blessings of God upon them, the Noble Quran is the main source of unity and inspiration of solidarity among Muslims. Stay tuned, dear listeners, as we are going to review some of the unity-inducing teachings of this heavenly scripture. Unity has been highly emphasized in the Noble Quran. In fact, there are more than 50 ayahs in the Quran which speak about unity and show the ways to reach unity. Interestingly, the number of the ayahs warning against disunity is nearly the same number. The issue of unity has been mentioned in the Quran with concepts like hold fast, cooperating, reforming, correcting the efforts of people, united ummah, the middle ummah, brotherhood, and so on. And these ayahs include warnings and commands which lead to materialization of unity and solidarity among Muslims. For instance, in ayah 92 of Surah Anbiya, God says, "Indeed, this ummah of yours is one ummah, and I am your Lord. So worship me." In ayah 52 of Surah Mu'minun, also we read, "Indeed, this ummah of yours is one ummah, so be wary of me." According to these ayahs, all Muslims shape one ummah and should move in the way of worshipping God. They should set aside differences not to pave the ground for enemies. Unity is so important and effective that God says to Muslims in ayah 103 of Surah Al-Imran, "Hold fast to Allah's cord altogether, and do not be divided, and remember Allah's blessing upon you when you were enemies. Then He brought your hearts together, so you become brothers with His blessing, and you were on the brink of a pit of fire, whereat He saved you from it. Thus, does Allah clarify His sons for you so that you may be guided?" According to narrations, this ayah was revealed about the two tribes, Aus and Khazraj, which were engaged in war and bloodshed for over 100 years. They were deprived of many moral characteristics, and it was sword which ruled between them.
Thus, the Noble Quran brought their hearts close together and made them brothers to march in the course of the bright Islamic culture and civilization. The Noble Quran in many ayahs points to unity and Islamic brotherhood. For example, ayah 46 of Surah Anfal reads, "And obey Allah and His Apostle and do not dispute, or you will lose heart and power will be gone. And be patient. Indeed, Allah is with the patient." Paying attention to this ayah and some similar ayahs makes it quite clear that unity is closely related to obedience of God and Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Reaching this phase of perfection and understanding will materialize only through patience and perseverance. The Quran asks Muslims here to give up differences as they will weaken them and will destroy their dignity and awe. Dear listeners, now it has become evident to every alert and wakeful Muslim that the Islamic Ummah can survive and go from a strength into a strength only through unity against the sworn enemies. Muslims should increase their knowledge of the Quran and the teachings of the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt to keep their self-esteem and solve great problems. Unity of the monolithic Islamic Ummah is the only way to triumph over the global arrogance and Zionism as the main enemies of Islam and Muslims.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Virtues of the Believers, Friday the 3rd of Ramadan, 1394, the 20th of September, 1974. Be wary of Allah and settle your differences. The third is something universal that applies to whatever it is you are doing. And it means to do whatever is good and avoid whatever is bad. Obey Allah and His Apostle by following their commands. Should you be faithful, then you will do all of this. The issue of faith, this pledge of the heart, this bond of thought, belief and mind to a single issue, to a single person, to a single pole, to a single core, this thing we call faith cannot come about simply by these means. Simply by a person feeling an attachment in their heart. No, the time when faith truly inheres in a person, when it becomes actualized, is when that person acts on it. Then, and only then, can a person claim that they are truly faithful, when they fulfill the requirements of faith and they act in accordance with faith. Then they can say they are truly faithful. That they truly believe, because it is only then that their life and the very fabric of their being differs from someone who denies Allah and rejects the truth.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Today, what is the difference in behavior between someone who denies Allah and someone who claims to believe in Him? They both do wrong. They are both absorbed by the materialistic concerns until their last breath. They are both willing to trade all virtue and all goodness for two more morrows, for two more morsels, for two more breaths. The only difference is that one honestly says, "I don't believe in God." The other claims that he believes in God. What kind of faith is this? The Quran is clear about what faith means. This is not some philosophical argument about which there can be doubt. If you truly believe, do these things. And one of these things is that you obey Allah and obey the Apostle, that you do as they command. What is God's command? It is self-evident that every person has certain duties and responsibilities, whether this is with regards to their own property, life and soul, or whether it is with regard to their relationship with other human beings, their relationship with Allah, their relationship with animals, or even their relationship with plants. If you obey Allah in all of these different fields of your life, then you can say you are a true believer. Otherwise, faith merely in the sense of feeling an attachment to some principle or cause, but without this attachment being reflected in one's words or deeds, in one's limbs or behavior, is of no use.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, Keep me company. Watching a rainbow in the sky is beautiful, but the idea of watching a rainbow in the mountains seems to be fictional. However, this fantasy becomes so real when you describe this phenomenon in geology. Tomorrow, I'll take a trip to Hormuz Island to watch this awesome, colorful landscape, which is known as the Rainbow Valley. Hormuz Island, which is located in the Persian Gulf, has an area of 42 square kilometers. This great Iranian island is home to one of the wonders of nature called the Rainbow Valley. The Rainbow Valley, which is located southwest of the island, is a narrow valley with multicolored soil surrounded by colorful mountains. It is painted with more than 70 colors and a variety of stones and minerals, which make this place an interesting destination for geologists. The minerals include black, white, and gray dolomites, pyrite, gypsum, anhydrite, apatite, and iron oxides. The color of the soil ranges from white, yellow, red, green, orange, beige, to brown, light turquoise, and even gold. The yellow, red, silver, and black colors are mainly of clay and iron oxide compounds, while the white, blue, pink, and gray are made of volcanic compounds. Well, I am now on a passenger boat. It's about 40 minutes from Haqqani Port in Bandar Abbas to Hormuz Island. I'm so excited to see this attraction. Just imagine, so many colors on the earth. Looks like a colorful Persian carpet. Amazing! Well, I am now in Hormuz Island. The beauties of this island are not for you. The Mount mountains surrounding the valley are so beautiful. Oh, look, a yellow-colored rock with red, blue, and pink pieces of stone around it. Very interesting. What doubles the beauty of the Rainbow Valley is the blue sky and the vast Persian Gulf. There are different colors here, but the red color has more share in this rainbow. Oh, masterpiece of nature. Extraordinary. You can't believe it. Well, I can't take my eyes off all these beauties. It's a really different experience. You have to see here yourself. Oh, look at there. Local women who are wearing traditional clothes are selling handicrafts. Let me see. A shellfish necklace. Yes, I want this. Actually, I don't like to leave this island, but I have to. This island is so special. Listen, sound of waves, seagulls. Oh, it's like a new birth. So, let me take a walk on the shore before leaving this island. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
I'm heading with Donbass militia fighters to a frontline position outside the city of Donetsk. Ukrainian soldiers are only 70 meters away. I'm told not to film the skyline or any prominent markers so as not to give away their positions. The cramped living quarters are dark and dank. A fighter with a call sign Yidra, meaning the otter, gives me a tour.
We live here not in trenches but under concrete. These are destroyed buildings that we've old basements. It is all dug out by hands, down the narrow passageways and understand what it's like to be a miner. We live here, breathe this air. You can't survive artillery any other way. At least you can hide from snipers, but not from artillery. Big caliber artillery too.
He shows me a picture sent to him by his daughter. I asked him what has motivated him to fight in these conditions for the last 8 years.
Because this is where I live. My mother lives 25 kilometers from here. I speak Russian. My mom and dad speak Russian. I was a miner here. It's my land.
A young fighter, barely 18. The grueling nature of this war is bringing a seamlessly endless wave of young men on both sides to fight. Thousands won't return home.
While the Ukrainians have been making advances in the north of the Donbass and the Kherson region, here on the front lines just outside Donetsk, it's very much trench warfare, where success is measured in meters rather than kilometers. It's pretty quiet here today. We have heard some small arms fire and some artillery. that I've been told that these trenches are in now have changed hands many times over the last 8 years of war here.
A motivational poster. It reads, Donbass was never made to kneel by anybody, and nobody will be able to do it.
We understand that the USA are ruling this circus. Europe needs to stop being their vassals. America doesn't care about others. Their only way is to be at war, and they build their domestic policy out of conflicts with other countries. In Syria, they played the card of radical Islam, and now they're playing the card of fascism. They need war's blood and cruelty, and they signed Europe up to it too. They missed only one thing, that Russia will not stop fighting.
While there is raging ethnic hatred of Russians in Ukraine, after interviewing dozens of soldiers and civilians in Donbass, despite the war, I've yet to hear any ethnic hatred of Ukrainians.
We don't blame all Ukrainian people. Ukrainian people are our friends and relatives. Those who study this understand that one-third of Europe are cousins. Ukrainians, Belarusians, Slovaks, Poles, and Slovenians. They're all Slovak people. Ordinary people are not to blame for this. We think they're just corrupted by evil.
Out many Ukrainians who want peace negotiations with Russia, but are scared to speak up. Indeed, President Zelensky was elected in 2019 of war in the East, but the sad truth is set to escalate further. Peace in Ukraine has never looked less likely than it does now. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Linked hand in hand, thousands of men and women surround the British Houses of Parliament, a symbolic act in solidarity with a man they call the world's foremost political prisoner.
It's obvious for any observer, for anyone who is fairly looking at this situation, that this is an enormous, monumental injustice of a man who is being persecuted by the authorities, who are using the coercive powers of the state in order to try to punish him for doing the right thing.
That right thing was exposing American crimes and conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, for which he's wanted by the U.S. government. The now 51-year-old Australian, co-founder of whistleblower website WikiLeaks, has been locked up in a maximum security prison near London since April 2019.
To his many supporters, Julian Assange is an anti-establishment hero who's been victimized, and that his prosecution is a politically motivated assault on journalism and on free speech.
Organized by the Don't Extradite Julian Assange campaign, the human chain is not just about securing one man's freedom.
This has implications for pretty much every journalist who publishes material critical of the United States. If he is actually extradited and they succeed, then any other journalist in the UK or from around the world could face the same fate as Julian Assange, which would, of course, would be a strong discouragement to them to publish any critical material, and we get something like a chilling effect, basically, whereby the press ceases to scrutinize foreign policy of the most powerful nation on the planet.
And that powerful nation, under the Trump administration, it was revealed last year, plotted to kidnap or kill Assange as he sheltered in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Earlier this year, the UK government approved the father of two's extradition to the United States to face criminal charges, which carry a maximum sentence of 175 years. An appeal to the UK's High Court is underway. Assange's supporters say they won't relent until he is unchained. Saeed Purizza, London.
People have rallied across the Yemeni capital Sana'a as well as other major cities to celebrate Prophet Muhammad's birth anniversary amid the highly alarming situation in Yemen. This comes days after the warring sides failed to renew a ceasefire agreement which ended earlier in October.
The relationship between the Yemeni people and Prophet, it is narrated in history books as well as the holy book Quran. Yemenis are the first to embrace Islam. Old relationship. The anniversary of Prophet Muhammad's birth has become a holiday for all Yemenis. There is no single year without this gathering.
Participants say they celebrate Prophet Muhammad's values and principles by honoring his birth anniversary, especially amid the Saudi-led war, which requires Yemenis to follow the Prophet's footsteps in the face of the coalition's tyranny.
The occasion of the Prophet's birth anniversary becomes more important year after year. It has become the first occasion and the first aid for Yemenis, although